Not that it mattered a great deal. He didn't need a formal diagnosis to know Clinton would have taken any comment about the writ's injunction to care for the poor and the least fortunate of God's children as a criticism of the church's record in that regard. As a matter of fact, he would have been perfectly correct if he'd done so too, Duquerne admitted. But at this particular moment, when Jaspar Clinton had divided the entire world into just three categories, those who were his allies, those who had an at least fleeting value as tools, and those who must be exterminated without mercy, suggesting that any aspect of the church's stewardship might be found wanting was dangerous. Duquerne had discovered there were times when he really didn't care about that. When his anger, his outrage, the pain stemming from his refound faith's recognition of his own blood guilt actually drove him to seek confrontation with Clinton. When he found himself almost yearning for destruction, even martyrdom, with all that would entail, as some sort of expiation for his own life, for his own acceptance of the vicarate's corruption, his own lifelong eagerness to profit by that corruption, for the fact that he'd stood there and not simply accepted Clinton's proposal to destroy the kingdom of Carus utterly, but actually acquiesced in it, helped to arrange it. Duquerne made himself resume his progress towards his waiting underlings, but his eyes were as bleak as the snow beyond the hallway's windows as he once more admitted his guilt to himself. He wouldn't pretend he wasn't terrified of what Clinton would have done to him if it had come to an open confrontation. That he didn't know precisely how savage an example Clinton would make of any member of the group of four who seemed to have turned against him. Yet it wasn't that fear which drove him to bite his tongue, keep his furious denunciation of Clinton's vileness lodged behind his clenched teeth. No, it was quite a different fear that kept him silent. The fear that if he allowed himself to be too easily destroyed, he would commit the still more grievous sin of dying without at least trying to undo the terrible, terrible damage he had helped to unleash upon God's own world.
"Not that I've figured out how to go about undoing any of it yet," he admitted desolately. "Maybe that's part of my penance. Is it part of my punishment to be forced to watch things getting worse and worse, without seeing any way to make them better again? But the writ says God will always find a way, whether man can or not. So maybe what he really wants me to do is to stop trying so hard, stop being so arrogant as to think I can somehow fix a disaster on a worldwide scale. Maybe he wants me to finally accept that I need to let him show me what to do, and then..."
Robert Duquerne's thoughts were abruptly interrupted as he walked full tilt into a wall someone had inconsiderately left in the exact center of the hallway. That was what it felt like, at any rate, although the wall's sudden oof suggested it might not actually have been the solid granite obstruction it appeared to be. He staggered backwards, almost falling. In fact, he would have fallen if someone's hands hadn't caught him by the upper arms and held him upright. He shook his head, cold-clogged ears ringing, and his eyes widened as they refocused on the face of the man he'd run into. Duquerne was not a short man, but neither was he a giant. In fact, he'd always been on the slender side, and his had been a decidedly sedentary life for the last 20 or 30 years. The man with whom he'd just collided was half a head taller than he, broad-shouldered and powerfully built, and he'd obviously spent the last several years of his own life exercising to maintain the physical toughness he'd enjoyed as a senior officer of the Temple Guard. He must outweigh Duquerne by a good 40 or 50 pounds, and very little of that weight advantage was fat. And he also happened to be named Howard Wilson. Duquerne found himself temporarily paralyzed, staring into eyes of Wilson Gray. They were hard, those eyes, with polished quartz-like purpose. The eyes of a man who, unlike Robert Duquerne, had never compromised with the temple's corruption. of a man who had every reason to fear Jaspar Clinton, and no reason at all to fear God.
"You want to be a bit more careful, Robert," Wilson said, setting him fully back on his feet before he released his grip on Ducairn's arms.
He patted the smaller man almost gently, as if to be certain there was no breakage, and his smile was thin.
"You might do yourself a mischief running into people like that. Life's too short to take that sort of chance, don't you think?"
Wilson cocked his head slightly with the question, and Ducairn felt an icicle run through his veins. There was something about Wilson's tone, something about the glitter of those hard eyes.
"He knows," Ducairn thought. "He knows I warned his brother. And God help me, he knows Clinton is going to kill both of them, and that I don't have the courage to try to stop him."
The church's treasurer felt his mouth open without having the least notion of what was going to come out of it, but then Wilson shook his head. It was a quick gesture, one that stopped whatever Ducairn might have been about to say cold.
"Of course it is," the doomed man said. "Too short, I mean. There are too many things we all need to do to just throw away the time to do them in. Doesn't the writ say God sets the course for every man to run?"
"Yes," Ducairn heard himself say. "Yes, it does."
"Well, then I don't imagine he's through with any of us until we've finished running it. So be more careful."
He actually smiled faintly, wagging an index finger under Ducairn's nose.
"Watch where you're walking, or else you won't have time to do all the running God has in mind for you."
It took every ounce of Ducairn's self-control to clamp his mouth on what he wanted to say. He looked into those gray eyes, and he didn't really trust himself to speak at all when he realized what was truly looking back at him out of them. Wilson only smiled at him again, gently this time, and gave him another pat, then turned and walked away.